We're on Daf Ayin Ches Amud Aleph, and we're about halfway through the Amud. We're up to the two dots. V'shar kol amashkim v'shvius. The Mishnah has established that the minimum requirement for tzah with regard to liquids is a revius. And for example, the case of dam. Tanur Rabbanu, we learned in a braisa, dam v'chol mini mashkim, and all other liquids. Where again, we have yayin and we have shemen and we have chalav that are specified in the Mishnah, but the rest, the balance, is birvius. Rav Shimon Elazar, Omer, dam kidei likchol biayin achas. The shear of dam is how much enough he would need to apply to the eye as a therapeutic for the eye. Shekein kochalin libirkis. And we have a procedure, a medical procedure, in which blood is applied to heal something that protrudes from the eye. Let's say there's a speck that protrudes from the eye, and dam would be therapeutic. Umaininu, and what kind of dam are you talking about? Are you talking about human blood or animal blood or a specific animal? And the Gemara answers, Doma de Sarnagoles Bora. So the dam of a Tarnagoles we understand. And what does Bora mean? Bora means on the outside, it means it's wild. And if you get a hen that's wild, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, this is called in the language of Vayikra, Sefer Yikra Perek Yud Aleph, it's called a duchifas. And it was common in those days in the Talmud to take the blood of this bird to treat some sort of a speck that protrudes from the eye. Now, we're going to get to Rav Shimon ben Elazar and Rav Shimon Gamliel, and they're going to agree that the minimum for most types of blood is a revius. But there's certain types of blood that have a certain significance to them that can be used in a certain way, and the shear and the chshivas therefore would be less than a revius. So Rav Shimon Gamliel omer dam kidei likchol bo ayin achas shekein kochalim liyarud. All you need for a shear of hotzah is the quantity of blood that it would take to apply to one eye, and that would heal a yarud, which is called a cataract in modern English. Others explain that yarud are white spots that form in the eye, and the Gemara in Bechoros has a description with regard to mum in a Bechor. And then the Gemara asks, Umay Nihu. Now, you want to say that there's a certain kind of blood that would be helpful for a cataract. What exactly, or what animal would give you that blood, the blood of which species would be beneficial in that way? And the Gemara answers, the Bryce answers, Visimonech. I'm sorry, Dama de Krustina, the blood of something that you'll find a certain creature. Krustina is a domestic hen. Some say it's a bat. I don't know in these days whether we want to extract things from a bat. That could be very explosive, but in any event, some say it's a mole, M-O-L-E, which is a habitat of the under buildings and so forth and so on, often called the inner creatures. And the simonech, if you want to remember it, you know, which blood is good for which malady, which disease, is gava le gava and bara le bra, which means the inside for the inside, and the outside for the outside. And what basically that means is that the moles, which we say are found under buildings, which is on the inside, that's good for the inside of the eye. But if you talk about the wild hens, the Domitanagolus bara that we spoke about before, they're on the outside, and their blood is good for protrusions from the eye, which is something that you see on the outside. If you're talking about someone who carries Dalet Amos and Rishus HaRavim, those are the different shirim of dam. Avol matznia, if you want to know about someone who stores away dam, is kol shu chayev. If he puts away even the smallest amount of dam, and we'll see exactly what that means and why he puts it away, then on that small quantity he'll be chayev otzah. Rabbi Shimon Omer. So until now we had Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, now we're talking about Rabbi Shimon, Bamedvar Mamurim Bimatznia. Now there's the various quantities that we spoke about before for applying to an eye. That's in a case of Matznia, where he specifically put it away for that purpose. He stored it away. But Aval Bimotzi, Eino Chayvel Berevius, if he hasn't stored it away. Now as Rabbi Shimon holds that, you have to store something away, you have to be a matznia, in order to reduce the quantity for the chiyuv maleches hotzah. So for example, you had previously stored a substance away, and now he takes out an amount, which, when I say take out, he carries an amount, which would be objectively, in other words, considered significant for other people. But if he stores it away for himself, even a very small amount, and it has a certain use, then he'd be chayav for a smaller amount. So, assuming that in the past, maybe he may have stored an amount, but he's still in the objective standard, according to Rav Shimon, and it depends on what others would do, would they consider this small amount significant? But if he stores it away now, then he'll be chayav even for a small amount, as long as it has a use. Now, if he didn't store it at all, and he carries it, then he's not going to be chayav unless he takes out a minimum of a revius. So let's go over, according to Rav Shimon, the three rules, or three paragraphs. Number one, he may have stored it in the past, but that's not enough. Unless it's objective and others would be machshiv such a small amount. Then we have the case where he stores it away right now and he needs it and it's useful for some purpose, then he's mechayev for a smaller amount. If he didn't store it away at all, then it's determined by revius. That's the objective shear. Umodim chachamim l'Rabbi Shimon. Now we're not sure if the Chachamim here are Rav Shimon Gamliel, that b'motzi shofachin l'rshus haravim sheshi'uram b'revius. If somebody takes out wastewater into a rshus haravim, then the shear is a revius. In other words, according to the Shita of the Chachamim, even if he didn't store a substance, he's going to be liable if he takes out a smaller minimum amount that's useful. But they would admit that in the case of wastewater, which doesn't really have much of a use, then it'll only be chayav hotzah if he carries out a full revius. Omar Mar. The Gemara now looks at the end of the Braisa. It says, so the Gemara wants to know, what's the difference between a motzi and a matznia? Otu matznia lav motzi, who, when you say he stores it away, we're not talking about someone who carried it out into Rishus HaRabim. He's not going to be chai for being matznia, you know, the fact that he stores something away, that's not a violation of Shabbos. Abai says, Hochamai Askinon. In this brisa, the case is a salmid, Sha'omelo Rabo, Lech Ufaneli makom l'seuda, clear up the place for me. We want to have a space for the meal. Holachu pinolo. So the Talmud went ahead and he cleared out a space. Dover chashiv lakol, and he carried something that is chashiv lakol. That's objectively everyone would agree and consider it significant. Chayev iloye, and that'll be chayev, even though he didn't store it away. But Dover she'eino chashiv lakol, if it's something that most people would not consider significant, then yatsnei rabe mechayev ilay. Then we need a matzniya. Then we need an act of storing it away, which would indicate its significance, at least on a subjective level. But ilo, if it wasn't stored away and it's not something that would be significant for all, then lo mechayev. Then he would not be chayev for hotzah. In this case, the Talmud would not be chayev for hotzah. And that's the difference in the brisa between motzi and matzniya. So even though the volume of substance is insignificant, but if you had stored it away, that makes it into significant on a subjective level, and you'd be chayev for taking it out, even though it's a small quality. And this reflects the shita of Rav Shim ben Elazar that we had back on Samach, on Ayin Vav, that if a person stores away even a small quality of something, a small minimum quality, then you'd be chayev for hotzah. Now, what happens if Reuven puts it away, he stores it away, a small quantity, and Shimon takes it out? So it would seem that that's what the mashal here of the Rebbe and the Talmud is, that the Talmud is going to be chayev for hotzah because the Rebbe puts it away. But that means that there's a certain relationship between the Talmud and the Rebbe. Now Rashi says that the Tanakhama of Rav Shimon in the Braisa, when he refers to Matzniya, he's talking about a scenario in which the intention was that he must take, we have to take into account the intention of a person who is actually taking the item out. In other words, that's the case where he had not previously stored it, but he takes it out. And that's called motzi. And the Tanakhama is of the opinion that in such a case, he's only b'chayev if he takes out a significant amount. But in the case of matznia, where there was an intent on the part of Reuven, let's say, to store away this very small amount, then you could be chayev even for a minimum amount. And the reason is because there was an intention on the part of the storer that he wants that what would normally be considered a minimum insignificant amount, but he makes it into significant. And that's the Tanakhama of Rabbi Shimon, that a motzi is someone who just simply took out the small amount. And it was never, stored previously. And in such a case, if the item had not been stored away, then it would depend on the objective significance. But in a case where he, in a minimum quantity, had put it away, he stored it away, he's a matznia, that already gives the object, even though it's a minimum amount, chashivus. So the Tanakhama of Rav Shimon is the same as Rav Shimon Elazar, who was mentioned earlier in this brisa. So you can distinguish between a case where there was an item that had never been stored previously, now it was taken out, and the case where a person stored the item away and he took it out himself. In the first case, where there was never a hatznah, and then it was taken out, there was no intention to take this amount out, it was not stored. In the second case, the intention is now being materialized, so to speak. In other words, his original intention, which was objectified in the action of being matznia it, that itself changes the status of this minimum amount, such that he be chayev. Now, this is the Gemara here, Omar Mar, but if you go back to Abaye, in his interpretation of Raisa, this was a case of an apprentice, and that was the additional chiddush here of Rav Shimon Elazar, that one is chayev if he takes out a minimum quantity of an item that was previously stored, and that applies even if it was not he who stored it away. So there's a difference between the one who stored it and the one who took it out. Whereas the Tanakhama of Rav Shimon, insofar as we identify him as Rav Shimon Elazar, he's talking about a case where the same person himself who stored the item took it out. Omar Mar, let's get to the last psaki in this price. Omar Mar, Modim Chacham L'Rabbi Shimon B'motzi Shofachin L'Shisaram Shashirim B'Raviyas Shofachin L'Mai Chazi. Okay, fine, you need a shear of Raviyas, but it's got to have some chashivas to it, even if it's a large quantity, but what are you going to do with it? You can't drink it, you can't wash with it. So Raviyas of this Mayim Shofachin, how could it be considered at all significant? And the Gemara has to answer, Amar Rabbi Yirmiya, Legabil Bahenes Atit. So they used to knead clay, and what they did is they took wastewater, and they would mix it with the clay and knead it together, and that would create some sort of a pottery, some sort of a cheres. So Gemara has a kashva sanya, Tit kide lasos Bahen, Pikur, he's only chayev the aver of hotzah, the melach of hotzah, with regard to tit, if he takes out clay, if he takes enough to form an opening for a kur, pikur. Now, this is a some sort of utensil that's used to contain metals. These metals are melted down for refining purposes, smelting purposes, and the bellows serve to fan the flames, is inserted into this hole, into this kli, which is called a kur, or a crucible, and the clay is now being used to form a rim around the hole, so the bellows will fit in snugly. Now, we just said that Shofachin is chayav in a revius. A small quantity of clay is enough for this purpose of opening the crucible, such that the bellows will fit into this hole. So if you want to say that wastewater is functional, is important, has chashivas, because you want to knead the clay, knead with a K of course, then one should be chayav for taking out enough water to knead a small amount of clay. But yet, you need a revius of wastewater as the minimum amount to be chayef otso. Lo kasha ha de migvil, ha de lo migval. So the last brisa that says that the minimum amount for clay refers to clay that's already been kneaded, whereas the first brisa that requires a revius to knead a large amount of clay, that's referring to a case where the clay has not been kneaded at all. L'fisheino dem torech legabel tit lasos pikur. A person not going to go through the bother of kneading just enough of that minimum amount of clay to open up a hole for a crucible for this kur. It's just not worth his effort. And, you know, the effort that you require to knead clay is such that a person would not expend that effort merely to obtain the amount needed for opening a crucible. And therefore, the amount of water that's needed for the amount of clay is not significant. One who does need clay will need a larger amount, which requires a revius of water for the proper mixing. So a revius of wastewater is the minimum useful amount. Needing clay is significant even in a smaller amount needed to make opening in a crucible, in this kur. And it'll happen that a person will use some of the clay that he has needed for that purpose, reserve the rest for another purpose. And this leads us to the Mishnah at the bottom of Daf Ein Ches. Hamotzi Chevel. if he carries a rope through Rishus HaRab, Kidei Lasos Ozen Lekupa, he's chayav because he takes it out enough to make a handle for a kupa, for some sort of a basket. Gummy, if he takes out reeds, or a kind of grass called a reed grass, is Kidei Lasos Tlai Lenufa Ulekvara. He's only going to be chayav if he takes out enough to make a hanging loop for a sifter or a sieve. And that's a smaller amount that's needed, that is normally needed to make a basket handle. A sieve or a sifter are very light. They don't require large loops to hold them. And we'll see the Gemara is going to ask a kasha, why is one potter, why isn't he chayav if he takes out this quantity of rope as well? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kidei litol mimenu midas minol lekatan. Rabbi Yehuda holds that the minimum shear to be chayav for gummy is the amount it would take to measure a child's foot for a shoe within it. In other words, it's a piece of rope and it's as long as a child's foot. A person would measure his child's foot and then he would take the rope to the shoemaker telling him, this is the size shoe I need. And this measure is smaller than that of the measure of the Tanakama. And Rabbi Yehuda argues about the minimum rope as well. Kidei likshar niyar, if he takes out paper, and paper in those days was made from grass, is the minimum shears kidei lichtov olav kesher mochsin, to write a tax collector's receipt on it. And the receipt is given to a person after he pays a tax. Let's say, for example, they used to tax you if you went through, let's say you crossed a river. So the official would give you a told paid receipt. Now, in a case with a tax, let's say you have a tax and it was waived, waived, then you're going to receive also some sort of documentation, some sort of receipt. And you retain that receipt so that the tax would not be, tax collectors would not be able to demand him any sort of tax down the line. So this receipt is consisted usually of two letters written in a larger script than our normal lettering. And that's the amount of paper that would be chashuv. Hamotzi kesher muchsin chayav. If he takes out on Shabbos in Rosh Hashanah a tax collector's receipt, he'll be chayav. Niyar machuk, on the top of Ayin Chesam and Beis, he takes out erased paper, as it was once written upon and then it was erased, so we don't consider it suitable for writing anymore. So what's going to be the minimum shear for paper that is a larger shear than the classic shear of a tax collector's receipt? Is kidei lichroch al atzlochis ketana shel plaiton. Plaiton, if you remember, we said was balsam, a very fragrant oil, and they used to keep it in a flask. And if he takes out on Shabbos enough paper to wrap around the mouth of such a small flask, then he'll be chayev. Some say it's not enough to wrap it around the small flask, but it has to be able to be pushed into the opening of this flask and sort of close it away. Or we have now animal skins, and they've not completely tanned, but at least they've partially tanned, and they were treated with salt, but not totally, you know, only early in the process here, there was no flour or gall nuts, other types of things that usually go in. And Kidei Lasos Kamiya. Now, Kamiya was made on a parchment on which they would write various psukim in the Torah. It was also a bundle of herbs, and those were worn to cure diseases. Now, these parchments and bundles were wrapped in pieces of tanned hide, or partially tanned hide. So the Mishnah says that the minimum shear to be chayav for or for a hide is enough to wrap around an amulet. Cloth is parchment. how much is the minimum amount of parchment? Is kedei lichtav al parsha ketana shebetefillin. Now, what's a parsha ketana shebetefillin? You know, keep in mind the cloth was expensive. It wasn't used to write receipts and things like that. So the minimum significant amount is larger than the amount that would be needed to write the smallest passage found in the tefillin. And we're going to discuss now what is the smallest passage that's written in the tefillin. So the Mishnah says, Shehi, the shortest passage, or maybe we should call it parsha, is Shema Yisrael. And there are four different parshas that are written in tefillin, and the shortest of all of them is Shema Yisrael, which is from Parshas Vayeschanan. Now the Mishnah mentions Shema Yisrael is the smallest parsha. Wouldn't that be obvious? So there's a whole discussion in Tosfos Yontif and others why the Mishnah felt compelled to spell that out. Dio, if he's carrying ink, kedei lichtov shtei osios. Shtei osios is the mim shir from Aleches Ksiva, and in the Mishkan on the Krushim, they used to write one os on one crush, keresh, and another on the other in order to match them together, to adjoin them together. And that's a chashivas. Kol, we said, was some sort of a cosmetic that was used on the eye. They likhol ayin achas, enough to paint one eye. And who would paint one eye? This is a difficult mission. We'll see the Gemara. Devek lu kedei litein berosh hashafshaf, to place on the head of a board. Okay, we'll have to see what that's all about, what kind of board. Now we get to, so we did Devek, and now we get to Zephes v'Gofris. Now we said many times when we were learning about Mehmed Likin that these are different kinds of substances. Zephes is pitch, and Gofris is sulfur, even in modern Hebrew. And how much do you have to take a minimum amount to be chayev? He says, kidei lasos nekev, to form a hole. Now, what kind of hole is he forming with pitch or with sulfur? And apparently, as the Gemara is going to explain later, this is a hole in a wine barrel, and you would draw wine from, whenever you needed wine, from this hole. And there was wax that was used to seal the hole between one, you know, one drawing and another when he took out the wine. Now, in terms of, just 1 second, of kidei lasos nekev in Zephes for Gofris, some have a girsa nekev katan. We don't have that girsa. Rashi apparently had such a girsa, and the Mishnah is talking about a small hole in which mercury was kept, and it was sealed in some sort of a vial with pitch or with sulfur, and then a small hole was made in the seal, and then the mercury could be slowly removed and it wouldn't spill. So that hole was then resealed with a certain amount of pitch or silver. So the second amount of silver that you need, of pitch or sulfur to seal up that hole, that's the amount that this Mishnah has in mind as the shear photo. Shava's wax, kedei liten al pi nekev katan. So this you can close up a small hole, and as we said before, the hole of a wine barrel. Charsis, which is crushed brick, is kedei lasos pikur shel tzorfei zov. Right, we had another kind of a crucible that was used for gold refiners, and you have to make an opening in that crucible, and the amount of shava of wax that you need in order to perhaps make an opening or perhaps close an opening. That's the shear of hotzah for wax. Rav Yehuda Omer, kidei lasos pitput, which is a tripod, and that will have in Perek HaBoneh a pitput, and the tripod, which is a pedestal, and then you would put the crucible on top of it. And we have to know if the crushed brick was used to prepare the brick, the cracks in the tripod. And the Tanakhama doesn't think that this quantity of crushed brick is sufficient, because it's not common to be used in that way. But Subin, in the case of Bran, kidei liten al pi kur shel tzorfei zov. So we have the crucible that was used by gold refiners. And talk for a minute about Sid. Sid is lime. Kidei losud ktano shebebonos, to smear this lime on the youngest of the littlest of girls. And the Gemara is going to try to clarify that this is the finger, the little finger of a girl. And lime was applied to the skin in order to remove some of the hair from the skin. And it cannot be applied to the entire body at once. That would be too dangerous. But amount that's significant enough to apply to even the smallest limb has chashivus and generates a chiv, a shir for chiv moleches hotzar. Rav Yehuda Omer, kidei lasos kilkul, enough to make the hair on the temples lay flat. And let's take a quick peek at Rashi here. And Rashi says, Lesod, Losud Ketana Shevbonos, is Toflos Sid Lahasir Saseyar. Okay, that we got. And then let's fast forward to the Rashi on Daf Peyom and Beis, where he discusses Kilkul, and this is the Rashi Dimasul Kilkul, which is about say about 10 lines down from the top. He says Sodino Sola Hashkiv Haseyar, and he gives you the French word Tinfola. So again, this is something that you smear in order for the hairs to go down. You know, it's like sometimes the hairs are, you know, so it seems here, just 1 second. In terms of the Shemin Amor, just 1 second. It says, is kidele yelosud etzbak tano, and Rabbi Udomer kidele losud kilkul, and he says here, andifi. Okay, what's andifi? Is tzida ubas tzida, the temple and the area under the temple. So lime was used to smooth down hair on the temples and to remove the short hairs from the area below the temples. Okay? Rav Nechemya Omer kidei losud undefi, and this apparently on the forehead. Alright, so that's what the Gemara spoke about before that we saw in Daf Pei. Chevel nami L'chayev. Why can't he be chayev for carrying out the rope? And kidei lasos tlai l'nofo l'kivra. Maybe he takes out enough of a rope to make a loop for the nap of a kivra. Why is he only chayev if he takes out a larger quantity in order to make a handle for a basket? And it's obvious from this Gemara that if the rope could be used for hanging loops, for creating hanging loops, as well as for a basket of handle, then if he takes out and carries out the amount that would take for the smaller of these two amounts, then he should be chayev, because even if it has two functions, each function is common enough to generate chashivus. So the Gemara answers, kevan de charik b'mona. The rope is very coarse, and it would cut into the wooden utensil that's being hung from it, is lo avdi inshi. So people don't make loops, hanging loops, out of rope. So a rope is used to fashion a basket handle, that's considered chashivus, but not to hang, to create hanging loops for the purpose of hanging a nafa v'chivra. Tana Rabbanan. So we see over and over again that chashivus is determined objectively by what is commonly used. Chutzin, those are the palm pieces, those sticks that come out of the palm. Kidei lasos ozen lesal kfifa mitzris. Okay, he's making a handle for a basket out of palm bark. That's enough to make the handle. Okay. Now, sieve is the bast. If you remember, we discussed this in the past, that you have a plant and it's covered by bark. Let's say a tree that's covered by bark, and between the bark itself and the inner part of the tree is something called a sieve, and Acherim Omerim, according to one opinion, let's identify that as Rabbi Meir, Kidei Litein Al Pi Mashpech Katan. So he has to take out this bast with a minimum quantity that would be enough to place it on the mouth of a small funnel, the Sanenis Ayayin, where they used to strain the water and take out the sediment. So this bast, was placed on the funnel. The wine was poured into the utensil through this funnel. The sediment was held back by the bast, and it did not pour into the utensil. The bast was soft and could not be made into ropes or hanging loops. It could only be used as a strainer. Revav, if he takes out grease, which is either oil or grease, then he's chayev kidei losuch tachas ispagin ktana. So let's say, for example, bread was baked and you sort of pushed or attached, if you would, the dough to the side of a hot oven, and then you needed a certain special spade in order to remove it. That's called Hadbaka Sapas, and that was necessary to remove the dough after it was heated, after the bread was baked. Now, to remove this, the undersides of the baked items were greased before they were attached to the wall of the oven. So this was revav that was used to smear the underside of the oven underneath a small wafer. That's all he's baking, is a small wafer, which is called ispagin ktana. Kamashi ura, how do I measure this? Is kisela, the size of a coin called a sela. Okay? Now, again, you have this wafer, and on the surface of the wafer, which is attached to the side of the oven, that's exactly the same size as the surface of a sela. Basanya kigrogeres, we have a brisa that says that the amount of this wafer that you're using here to be meshayer the revav has to be as large as a dried fig, not a sela. So what is the shear here? Is it a sela or a dried fig? You know, is the wafer the size of a dried fig? And the Gemara answers, they're both the same. Idi v'idi chad shiruhu. In other words, the wafer, the size of a dried fig, is going to have a surface which is the size of a sela. So two ways of saying the same thing. mochin. Mochin, we said, was some sort of stuffing, whether it's shearing from the back, you know, the wool on the back of a sheep, or maybe it's cotton. And what's the shear of mochin? Kidei lasos kadur ktana, to make a small ball. Again, they used to stuff balls with cotton and wool and stuff like that. Not much different today. Kamashi uro ke egos, the size of a nut. Maybe a walnut. We see over and over again that the shiurim fotza are very small, very minimal. Niyar kidei lichtov olav kesher mochsin, right, the receipt of the tax collector. Tana, we learned in Brisa Kama, what's exactly the size of a kesher mochsin? Shtei osios. Now here there's a girsa issue here. Shtei osios shal kesher mochsin b'ksav yevani. So it's two letters that were written in Greek script. That's a little bit larger than Hebrew lettering. And this is a kula that you're not chayev for the paper that could be large enough to write two Hebrew letters, which is very minimum. We're going to be making, we're saying you're not chayev unless it's roy for two Greek letters. So Gemara asks, "Verminu, I have a contradiction from a brisa. The brisa says hamotzi niyar chalak. So he's got a blank paper, piece of paper. Im yeshbo kidei lichtov shtei osios chayevim lav potter." The brisa doesn't mention a word about ksav yevani. It sounds like we're referring to ksav ivri. And he's chayef if it has the space. In other words, if the paper has the space enough for writing two letters in Lashon Kodesh, that would be enough. So it seems that the minimum amount of paper is a smaller amount based on this brisa. Omer Rav Sheshes, Maishtei Osios. What does this brisa mean when it says two letters? We assumed it was two letters in Hebrew, but now we're saying no. Shtei Osios Shel Kesher Mochsin. Two letters that are used when the tax collector gave you a receipt for your taxes, and those are larger characters, I guess the size of Osios Yevonios. And a contradiction is not a contradiction. Both brises are teaching the exact same din. Rav Amar, he has a different reconciliation. Shtei osios didan. The second brisa is talking about paper that's large enough to write two of our small letters, ubeis achiza, but it also has to have some blank margin, you know, some gilyon over there. That's called a beis achiza, where you grab onto the paper. Tahainu kesher mochsin, which is the same size as the tax collector's receipt. So again, it's two different ways of explaining the same thing, the exact same shear, if you assume that the shtei osios, you have to add a beis achiza. So, you know, if you have a piece of paper, well, back in the day it was more like thick, acid-free paper or parchment, and you leave a gilyon, but sometimes they would cut out the gilyon, especially if it was attacked by bugs. There were holes in the paper, they would cut that out. So let's say you cut it out, and you have a sheer of paper that's just for the two osios without a gilyon, and there's no room for a margin, so that would not be chayav. Meisvei, here's a kash on Rava. It says in a braisa, motzi niyar machuk, if he carries erased paper, ushtar parua, what happens is that if you borrow money from someone, you write him a shtar, and you give the malva a shtar, and now the malva gets his money back, and he gives the shtar over to the lova, and that's, just one second, it says here, shtar niyar machuk, ushtar parua. Not sure. It sounds to me that we're talking about two different descriptions. One is called niyar machuk, and the other is called shtar parua. And now the question is it chayav for this otsa? And the Brisa establishes that im yesh beloven, Beloven shalo kidei lichtov shtei osios. Now it's in the margin, in the white space, there's enough room to write two letters. O bekulo kidei likroch al pitzol chiso haktana shel paltian. Or if this paper was large enough, then you could plug up the mouth of a flask of a balsam or a chayev. V'yimlav potter. So if the entire paper is used for wrapping a flask, then the document is useful, and one who carries it out is liable. But if not, if it's not large enough to cover a flask, lotzo al pitzluchuso, then the document is insignificant, and he's potter for carrying it. So the Gemara says, Bishleimler of Sheshes. I understand this price very well according to Rav Sheshes, the Omer Mai, Shtei Osio Shal Kesher Muchsin. In other words, the two letters on this piece of paper are the letters that are being used in a tax collector's receipt shop here. The price makes sense because this price is also referring to two letters used for tax collector's receipt. And if we go like Rava, Diomashtei Osios di Dan Ubeis Achiza, with two of our letters, which are small letters, plus the blank margin, is the Hainu Keshem Muchsin, and Rava identified that as equal to the size of a receipt from the tax collector, is this last brisa is shver. Why? Because Hacha Beis Achiza Lo Tzarech. The brisa doesn't mention any additional space here in the paper for writing on its margin. And that's not a requirement to set up the shear. And as far as we're concerned, let him hold up, on that section that was erased, and that's where he's going to hold the document. So according to Rava, this brisa should have really specified a smaller measurement, meaning, according to Rav, when it says shtei osios in the previous price, it means that there's enough room on the parchment to write two osios plus the margin to hold the document. And that requires a larger amount. So you can have a smaller amount of fresh parchment that's required so that the paper can be held by the erased section of the document. And the brisa shouldn't have referred to the measurement used in the same term. Use the same term. It doesn't make sense. Kasha, the Gemara, blives with a question.
Well, just to reiterate the last Kasha, which Gemara blives Kasha on in Rava. Rava says that when we talk about the shear of an iyar, it's got to be Shtei osios ketanos plus the beis achiza, which is equal to enough room to write two large osios, which is called the muchsin. But the brisa here seems to assume that all you need is a niar, which is chalak or parua, and either there's no ksav at all that was ever written on it, or it's written in a way that it's no longer usable. In any event, it says, Lichtov alav shtei osios. There's no indication that you have to add a beis achiza. So again, Rav Sheshes is going to be okay, because he's going to say that shtei osios means the larger letters of muchsin. But according to Rava, we need, in order to get from shtei osios to the muchsin, we have to bridge that gap with a room for what we call a beis achiza, some margin, empty space on the niyar that you could use to grab onto the niyar. And this price doesn't seem to indicate anything about adding a beis achiza, that extra space for grabbing onto it. Kash, so Gemara leaves that shver. Tanur Rabbanan, Hamotzi Kesher Mochsin, Ad Shelo Hero LeMoches. So if he carries it before he actually showed it to the tax collector and proved that he doesn't have to pay the tax, is chayev. But misharula moches, if he's already shown it to the moches, he's displayed it to prove his innocence and his ptur, his exemption, then that's not considered hotzah. Because what function does this kesher moksim have if he's already used it to achieve its goal? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af misharola moches, chayv neshe tzorachlo. He still needs it. In other words, what does Rabbi Yehuda mean here when he still needs it? May be nayu. What are they arguing about? Why does Rabbi Yehuda say that he still needs this document after he's already shown it to the moches? Om Rabbi Yikabeinai Rahite Muchsa. They're debating whether it's Darkon Shabnei Adam Lishmar Esakesha Shemuchsa. In other words, maybe he might want to hold on to this Kesha Shemuchsin Kidei Laroso Lerotzim Shel Hameches Sherotzim Achrei Ovrim Benor. Right, so you're talking about passing over the, you know, the bridge over the water, and you paid your tax, you paid your toll, as we would call today. And there are those who run after, they're hired to specifically, like policemen, so to speak, you know, to give out parking tickets. They're running after those who pass the nar, and they start inventing stories and libels that they never paid the tax. So Rabbi Yehuda says it's very common for people to hold on to this receipt, to show it, maybe not to the tax collector, the moches himself, but to show it to these rahiti muchsa. These are the rotzim achara ovrim binar. So that if they create some sort of false libel against them that they didn't pay the toll, they could produce this receipt, this document. The Tanakhama, on the other hand, holds that people don't hold on to the shtar. It's very rare for someone to be so nervous that maybe they'll catch him, and, you know, the Rotzim will get a hold of him and he'll leave the shtar. Now, what happens if if the facts on the ground, the situation was that the Rotzim actually get a hold of him and they started accusing him of not paying the meches. So in such a case, yecholim hem li poter mehem al yidei sheyachzeru lemoches sheyaker vahem. According to the Chachamim, they can go back to the moches who collected them, and the moches will remember that they paid the tax. I mean, all this assumes a certain kind of, shall we say, a good, healthy, positive relationship between the moksin and the Jewish people who are paying the taxes. Rava Omar, he has a different take on this machlokes. Chin Tanakama Rabbi Yehuda is moches gadol, moches katan ikabeinayu. They're debating a case where there's a moches gadol and a moches katan. Now, sometimes what they have is a moches gadol, and underneath him they have the moches katan. He's like second in command, his sidekick. Because sometimes the moches himself doesn't want to be toreach and stand on the bridge and collect, you know, from every single person a toll who passes, every person who passes over the bridge. Now this person, this Jew, is holding on to a shtar, a document, and he's, you know, about to cross the river, or maybe he crossed the river already, and perhaps the document might say that he doesn't have to pay for crossing the river. He's already in the past paid the toll. So Yehuda holds that a person will be shomer, he'll guard his shtar, even if it means he has to, he'll only need it to show it to the moches katan, who might, you know, block him from crossing the river and say, well, you know, you didn't pay the toll last time. But the Tanakhama holds that a person doesn't watch such a shtar, because again, the gadol gave certain simonim, and then, you know, and he said to him, look, if the katan goes after you, just tell him to follow. You know, you gave him a password, so to speak. And the katan will let him cross without paying the toll. Rav Ashi omer chad moches ikabeinayu. The machlokes applies even when there's only one moches. And you don't have to hold on to this document, this receipt, to show it neither to the Rotzim nor to the Moches Kata. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda holds they would hold on to the shtar, and they should tzarcho laharos lemochas sheni. There's another moches, another tax collector that's collecting the tolls for those who pass over the bridge. And not in order to exempt himself from paying the tax, but rather the Amar Le, he's going to tell the Moches HaSheni, Chazi Gavra de Moches Anoa. I want you to see what a reliable and honest person I am. I'm not trying to cheat and get away with paying the tax. And the reason for this is he doesn't want some bad reputation to go out about him. And afterwards, you know, they're going to say about him that he was a tax evader. So this is his way of holding on to, of maintaining his reputation by holding on to this shtar that proves that he was a loyal, reliable citizen who paid his taxes. So we're up to Tanu Rabbanan Amotzi Shtar Chov Ad Shelo Pro'o. Let's just make a note of where we got up to here. How many lines? Let's see. Amotzi Shtar Chov, I would count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 10 lines up from the bottom of the Amud. Tanu Rabbanan Amotzi Shtar Chov.